This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to Cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for what is, for many of you, your favorite segment here on Intelligent Medicine, which is our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's an opportunity for you to weigh in with your questions, and we get some very interesting questions. We have several interesting ones lined up today. I previewed them. The way you get us questions is you email us questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we will review them, and if they are suitable, we will read the answers on the air, and they will be grist for the mill for a lively discussion. Layla Mutin, as many of you know, is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She is the possessor of a RD degree, registered dietitian, and also a master's degree, an advanced master's degree in the field of nutrition. Hi, Layla, how are you?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you doing?
Good, good. Sir, are you gearing up for the upcoming seminar?
Yes,
I'm very excited. Yeah, we're excited about starting up our seminar series once again. There was a hiatus of a few months, and I'll tell you why there was a hiatus. It was great. You know, a lot of people came, they enjoyed it. We would get, 60, 70, 80 people showing up at a time. But it was, people were complaining because we have such a wide audience, and people were saying, well, I can't get into New York, or it's such a hassle to get into New York for these things. And so we've been working with our technocrats, our IT gurus, on creating an opportunity for people to be able to listen, not to listen, but to actually watch a video recording of these things.
Right.
So that opportunity will be made available after we have our session on the 24th. We invite people to come to the session. You can come live. The session is free to Hoffman Center patients, and we encourage you to come. It's better in person, and there'll be an opportunity to interact with us and see us in person.
Yes.
However, for those of you, and we have listeners all across America and throughout the world, if you want to be the beneficiary of a very, very fascinating seminar, please come on the 24th of June and give us the details on that.
The 24th of June, the topic is strategies to combat overeating and food addiction. The seminar webinar begins at 6:30 p.m. Reservations are a must, so please do call us to reserve your seat, 212-779-1744. We look forward to seeing you.
Great. And, you know, I have to say that this is, I wish I could make this mandatory for all our Hoffman Center patients, because it is so...
As homework.
I tell you why. It's really important, because when we sit and we talk, but we don't have a chance to go into great detail about some of the theory behind food craving. Now, we can say to, for example, to somebody with heart disease that they should be on a certain diet. Or we can say to someone with colitis or an autoimmune disease they need to be on a certain diet. And give them a handout and tell them what to eat. But there is a big gap between the suggestion and the implementation.
Yes.
And what thwarts that implementation are some basic psychological and biological factors that we're going to go into in depth. And then we're going to give people some news you can use, some strategies that they can use to interrupt this circuitry which keeps propelling us back to behaviors that undermine our health.
Education is such an important part of a successful outcome for all of our patients, for all of our clients, for everybody who's interested in taking control of their lives, their health, their cravings, everything. So we do encourage it, yes.
Okay, and so and reservations are still available, so please do call us right up until the time of the seminar on next week.
Next week, the 24th, Wednesday, June.
So before we get into our questions, the big news, and we have to discuss this, is the FDA, mm-hmm. Food and Drug Administration, has now recommended that trans fats, hydrogenated fats, be outright banned
wow.
from the food and restaurant industries.
You know, that's very interesting that this is being spearheaded by the FDA, because it's the FDA that's allowed all the processed food companies to say, you're allowed to say trans fat free if a serving of your product contains less than half a gram of trans fats.
And that might be, it's a almost, serving is ridiculous because it might be two Oreo cookies.
Right. Who's and who eats two?
Right. So it, there's it's a very crazy situation where you could say trans fat free, mm-hmm. but it actually contains substantial amounts of trans fats.
Right. Right.
So we have, and the consumer can be unaware of this.
Mm-hmm.
You read, you know, as consumers, even the ones who read labels, it's deceptive.
It is.
And then, of course, in restaurants and fast food places, unless they make a specific declaration, there may be trans fats concealed in the foods.
Yes.
Now, so, you know, we could do an entire seminar on trans fats, and maybe that's what I'll do, because I will maybe do a clinical focus on trans fats.
Wonderful.
But the background on that is that... this actually comes out of our experience in World War II. You know the expression, guns and butter? You know, you can't have butter when you have guns. In other words, you have to make a decision.
Okay.
So during World War II, they took all the butter and they sent it overseas to the soldiers so the soldiers could be strong and fight. And so they were rationing butter,
mm-hmm.
and they came up with this great idea. They came up with this plasticine material that could be a butter substitute. It just looked awful. It was like, sort of looked like Crisco.
Wow.
And they gave it to people on the home front. And they had this industry, they created this industry, and then they said, well, people don't really accept this because it doesn't taste as good. You know, it looks awful, and people really crave the real thing.
Yeah.
But the industry was in place, and then they started this propaganda that saturated fat is bad for you, and these polyunsaturated fats are supposedly good for you. And you remember, maybe you're old enough to remember the Imperial margarine commercials.
Sure.
You know, you're sitting at a table and like, bing, there was like a crown on the mother's head because she was so wise as to serve her family this healthy alternative to this bad saturated fat.
Yeah.
And we're off to the races with saturated fat. Now, the other thing about trans fats is that they're virtually indestructible. Really promote the shelf life of products. So you can just put stuff on the shelves and they don't go bad. Whereas butter goes rancid. You know,
yes.
We know that, I mean, actually I had this happen because I got this brilliant idea, I got this wonderful butter, delicious butter, and I had this idea that, you know, it's inconvenient. You take it out of the refrigerator, then it's like hard and you have to like cut it with a knife, and I was like
You need to use a steak knife.
I was messing up my gluten-free bread and, you know, so I said, let me leave it out so that it's at room temperature, that's nice and soft. Well, I left it out for 2 weeks, and what I discovered is that natural butter, this was superb, really great butter, it gets rancid. It spoils.
Back in the old days, if you churned your own butter, it could probably sit indefinitely on the kitchen table, but maybe...
Yeah, I think it does go bad, or, you know...
Probably.
In the old days, you'd store it, you know, on the windowsill or in the cellar or something like that, in the cold months. So there's an interesting sidelight to this, is that there is a 100-year-old scientist headline in the Washington Post, the 100-year-old scientist who pushed the FDA to ban artificial trans fat. This guy is 100 years old. He's named Fred Kummerow.
Mm-hmm.
He is a 100-year-old University of Illinois professor. I look at his picture. The guy looks 80.
Wow.
He looks amazing. He declares... science won out. He actually sued the FDA in 2013 for not acting sooner. And he says it's very important that we don't have this in our diet.
Yeah.
Now, what I have heard, you know, I listen to talk radio sometimes. I listen to some of these right-wing hosts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes, you know, I agree with them from the standpoint that we do not want government interference in our lives. There's too much government interference. They want to regulate everything.
I agree, too. Yeah.
On the other hand, so what they're saying is, oh, the government shouldn't be, you know, interfering with our right to have trans fats, whatever we want. You know, if we want a cookie, if we want, like, you know, pastry, if we want to use...
soda.
Whatever. You know, like, people were up in arms because Bloomberg wanted to limit the soda, you know, size and blah, blah, blah. I got to say that the FDA was established right around 1900. mm-hmm. in response to a very important book by Upton Sinclair, who's an American writer. He wrote a book called The Jungle.
The Jungle, I read that.
Which exposed the horrible practices of the meat industry. But at the same time, you had very unethical people in the pharmaceutical industry who were making poison. They were literally making poison, putting it in a bottle, and selling it to the American folks.
Mm-hmm.
There is a role of government, in my opinion, in preventing people from being sold poison.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
I think trans fat is not like arsenic or cyanide that kills you immediately.
But it will kill you soon enough.
Yeah. And frankly, there's some people who are like those rats who, in the New York City tunnels, you know, we keep seeing rats in New York City tunnels. They're poisoning them all the time.
Yes.
They're hardy rats. They're like super rats. And I think they're human super rats who can consume practically anything. They still, you know, live a reasonable number of years. But here's the other argument that I would make. If you could absolve the general public, us taxpayers, mm-hmm. of the medical expenses associated with people who have trans fats, I'd say it's on you. You want it? Fine.
It's on you.
You pay for your stent.
Yeah.
You pay for the cancer treatment.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah, but that would be uncompassionate. Obviously,
that's
we can't.
True.
Because there's
it's
so
true.
Many people who do bad stuff for themselves. I mean, you're that would be like saying, Dr. Oddman, you know, you broke your hip, you stupid idiot on your bicycle.
Stop riding your bike. Why
and
are you...
you insurance shouldn't pay for that, because if you had just sat home, you know, and, you know, read your iPad, you wouldn't have had... Of course, then you would have gotten a heart attack from sedentary lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, so the point being, I think that there is a public interest in preventing disease.
Yes.
That is pretty clearly established now. And the question is, as this 100-year-old guy says... is why did it take so long? He actually, in the 1950s, he discovered this.
Mm-hmm.
He convinced a local hospital to let him examine the arteries of people who had died from heart disease in the 1950s. And they say in this article, he made a jarring discovery. The tissue contained high levels of artificial trans fat.
Ah.
And he was onto this in the 1950s. He was like, you know, one of these Old Testament prophets, you know, mm-hmm. proclaiming this, like Jeremiah, you know, that he was warning people. Okay, how many years later? 60 years later, we now have the facts 65. At our disposal.
Yeah.
And I think the FDA is acting in our interest. You know,
for a change.
Right. The FDA is no friend to me, because the FDA wants to ban certain, you know, vitamins. They want a lot of control, pre-approval over vitamins.
Well, we know why. They're former pharmaceutical executives.
Right.
60% of that board is.
Yes. Mm. So, you know, I thoroughly approve of this, and it's going to, you know, I'm going to lose my libertarian credentials here, because, you know, it's like, you know, true libertarians say, it's a matter of personal responsibility, you have to make the decision, blah, blah, blah. But I think when poison is being marketed to the American public, we have to do something about it.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's that, and, you know, I'll be discussing this more. So let's get to some questions.
Okay. We've got a question from Eliza. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Thanks for the very informative podcasts. I have a condition called quantitative platelet disorder. So I have thin blood and a problem with coagulation. I was told not to take any NSAIDs because they all thin the blood. But unfortunately, many anti-inflammatory natural substances also thin the blood. Fish oil, curcumin, grapeseed extract all carry a warning to be cautious if you have thin blood. Can you recommend a natural anti-inflammatory that won't thin my blood?
Well, here's the answer to that. This term quantitative platelet disorder is, I think, it probably refers to a situation where the platelets are being observed to see if they go below a certain threshold. Actually, you don't get bleeding tendencies until your platelets drop below about 50,000. And normal platelets is 120,000 or greater, but you have a large margin of error between 120 and 50 before you get bleeding effects. I think it's important to keep monitoring these people periodically to see if they go into what's called ITP, idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we paid, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to send me to medical school so I can pronounce these words. ITP is this low platelet disorder, which can be devastating because people start to spontaneously bleed. They hemorrhage to death. But that usually occurs when the platelets go below the teens.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this person is inordinately concerned. She can take any of these things, fish oil, vitamin E.
Mm-hmm.
She can take curcumin. These things slightly thin the blood, but not in a pronounced way. The way to tell is if you suddenly develop easy bruising or in a, I guess both sexes shave, you know, men and women shave, but if you're you know, shaving your legs as a woman or shaving your face as a man and it just get a little nick and it just doesn't stop,
right.
Or if you sneeze and you get an eye hemorrhage, you know, that like bloody thing that you sometimes get
in the white,
in the white of the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Or if when you brush your teeth, you get bleeding.
Yes.
You know, then I would say there's a problem.
Yeah.
But there probably isn't materially a problem. There might be a problem associated with surgery. That's why I wrote an article about supplements for surgery, that maybe there's some that you might want to avoid because that's a condition where you get traumatized.
Yeah. And generally a week or two before surgery,
mm-hmm.
you should stop all blood thinning supplements. We wouldn't recommend to Eliza to take 9 fish oil soft gels a day for any reason.
Right.
You know, we probably keep it at 4.
She mentioned NSAIDs, and there are two types of NSAIDs. There's aspirin, and then there's Advil, Motrin,
Ibuprofen.
Aleve, you know, ibuprofen. And actually, it turns out that ibuprofen will increase the risk for blood clots. Paradoxically,
really?
It increases the risk for stomach bleeding, but it increases the risk for strokes and heart attacks. So, that's the paradoxical about that.
Huh. Okay. Wow.
It will neutralize the benefits of aspirin if taken with aspirin.
I wonder if fish oil might counteract that. That's interesting. Wow. Okay. Eliza, thank you for your question. Take your natural anti-inflammatories. Just probably not too much is all.
Right.
Our next question is from Alan. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Over the years, I'm 68. My fasting blood glucose, 89, and A1C 5.7 have climbed gradually in spite of my reasonably healthy lifestyle, robust anti-sugar supplementation, chromium, cinnamon, berberine. Can you comment on the wisdom of requesting metformin from my doctor as a preventative before the out-of-range alarm bell is rung on my A1C?
And the key is, what is his A1C?
5.7. Yeah.
Okay. So, look, There has been a lot of discussion about how slight elevations within the normal range of hemoglobin A1C may somewhat predispose you to disease, particularly in the wake of David Perlmutter, who points out that we really want to keep your A1C low because with each uptick in your hemoglobin A1C, even if 5.7, 5.8, 5.9, non-diabetic, but maybe pre, that it increases your risk for dementia, for example. However, you know, I think there's a little too much of a mania about that.
Okay.
And it really, I would suggest that this gentleman do the best he can and not worry so much about that, because worry is also not good for your health.
Right.
And 5.7 is a pretty respectable score, especially as you get older, because blood sugar control is less tight as you get older.
That's true.
Not that everyone should get diabetic, but, you know, show me an 85-year-old whose hemoglobin A1C is 5.9, and that's not terrible.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Fairly common, because the pancreas loses its efficacy in insulin secretion, and the feedback mechanisms that keep blood sugar within range are weakened, and so I wouldn't argue for such rigorous control. Look, metformin is not a terrible drug. I prescribe it, and it's actually been shown to have some anti-cancer effects. Some people just take it. You know, they're sort of that life extension crowd who think that metformin is like a nutrient that is anti-cancer.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a drug I like, that would be it for things like pre-diabetes.
But there's side effects with metformin.
It,
you know, gastro side effects. It also interrupts vitamin B12 metabolism.
Yes. Yes, so, and folate as well. So it's important to supplement those.
Yeah.
So metformin, I don't know. I would suggest, Alan, you know, remain very active. Exercise is also helpful.
Do you know actually the story on metformin? It's botanically derived. It's not, they no longer derive it from plants, but it's based on a plant called the goat's rue, which had blood sugar controlling properties and insulin sensitizing properties. And so then they, you know, like with aspirin from white willow or statins from red yeast rice, they synthesize it now.
Wow.
And in a sense, it is a natural, quote, natural.
But you know what's come up against metformin lately? Berberine.
Oh, berberine.
And it does just about as well.
In toe-to-toe comparisons, berberine works as well. And you know what's interesting about berberine is I never used to use it for blood sugar. I always used to use it for gastrointestinal problems. Maybe part of the way it works is via the gastrointestinal tract because it changes the flora slightly.
Yes.
And we know that the flora has an impact on metabolism. So
wiping out those bad microbes.
By the way, the product we use is called CM Core, which is a combination of berberine and grapeseed
extract. Yes, yes. So Alan would benefit from CM Core maybe better than metformin.
Right, but he says he takes berberine.
Yeah, he is taking berberine.
Right.
So continue. Terrific. Thank you for your question, Alan. Okay. We have a comment from Sheila. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Call me crazy, but I have reason to believe that upping my ubiquinol dosage from 100 to 200 milligrams is helping me sleep better.
Oh.
I upped my dosage after reading how ubiquinol can help with energy production, mitochondrial function. I'm 46. I'm a female endurance athlete. As a poor sleeper, I notice improved sleep after just a few days. And I read how sleeping is actually an energy-intensive process. Could the extra energy created at the cellular level be helping my sleep?
This is a beautiful comment because what she says is precisely true, is that we tend to think of sleep as the absence of wakefulness, and hence it's sort of like you're turning off, like when you turn off your TV, your TV is resting. But actually, when you're in sleep, you go into a very brain energy intense state. It's one of the reasons why you lose weight while you sleep. The longer you sleep, the more weight you lose, because it's an energy intense state where there's a lot of repair, a lot of brain activity, there's a lot of metabolic demand.
A lot of cleaning.
And I haven't heard this with relationship to ubiquinol. It's paradoxical because ubiquinol is kind of a stimulant or an energizer, but it helps you sleep better. I've noticed this with regard to thyroid. I have patients who are low thyroid, and they have sort of a like a uneasy, light sleep, you know, that kind of delirious kind of sleep where people don't go into deep REM sleep. When they take thyroid, they say, I sleep better. And that's paradoxical because thyroid speeds you up a bit.
Yeah.
But it allows more deep brain metabolic activity.
Which requires energy, too, so that's really fabulous. Thank you.
That was a great question. So this is a good time at which to pause, because we generally divide these podcasts into two parts, as many of you know. So please, you know, it's kind of like the old LPs. Please turn to side two of this Berlitz language lesson. The subject is Swahili. No. So we're going to continue with questions. Give us a preview of what's on side two.
Can I take Diflucan weekly for 6 months?
Okay, so the question is, this is relationship to candida or yeast problems treated with the medication Diflucan, an antifungal. We'll field that question in just a moment. Stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is our weekly Q&A with Layla. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.